Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Barry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Barry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with someone you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One-on-One, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
You know, next thing I know, I was all in. It started with one practice, and then the biggest factor was just being able to see how you can impact a young man's life and change his outlook on things. And it's the same to this day. Like, it has nothing to do with football. A lot of it is just like you're helping kids get on the right path and stay on the right path.
And our guest this week is Rick Preet. He is the head football coach at Roman Catholic High School, and he has led the team to a tremendous 2024 season. And Rick, thanks so much for coming in studio.
Thank you for having me. Excited.
And appreciate you coming in studio, because as we are recording this, you guys are about 48 hours away from playing for a state title. Magical season. You guys have been building towards this. We were talking earlier about expectations for this group and, you know, how you thought they had big things in them. Is there a moment this year when you realized that this group was going to be able to meet your lofty expectations, a game, a practice, or just something where you were like, yeah, they get it?
You know, I would say yes and no. And I would say yes, as far as, like, if I had to point to a moment, it was really the Malvern game, you know, going into Malvern and playing a great program like them and getting that win late in the game, you know, sealing that with an interception. And the way they played was, you know, kind of reassured us that we had something here. But just tracing it back to, you know, obviously the last 6 years, you know, to be honest, just the work. And we kind of knew that 6 years of work was about to pay off.
Over the 6 years, what was your process? Like, when you took over, Roman had been down for a few years. When you come in, how did you approach it as far as getting the program to the heights that you're enjoying now?
I think number one was to just establish standards, the way we do things, the way we go about our business, to let the kids know that the work was the only thing that was going to work. So our goal every year is just to play more football and take more reps than anybody else out there. That's kind of our motto. So just starting 6 years ago, making weight room mandatory, you know, taking attendance in the weight room, small things like that, I think, pay off. Getting out on the field for workouts as soon as we possibly can. And you know, between the 7-on-7s and the camps and anything else that we can do just to get that muscle memory and things like that, I think have paid off. And, you know, it was a slow process because year one, that senior group was tremendous. They went from 0-10 the year before we got there to they picked up 5 wins and they beat Archbishop Wood for the first time in school history. So I knew we had something with that group. And I think they kind of laid the groundwork. The next year we kind of got, well, we all did get, you know, interrupted by COVID and kind of forced us to take a step back. But that 3-7 team the year after had high expectations, but we knew they were young. And I think that kind of just with the work and the day to day, I think the last 2 years prior to this year being a 9-win team And then we lost two tough games in the city championship to Imhotep Charter, which is just a tremendous program. And this year we were able to get over the hump. I think it's just, again, just a culmination of the work. So that was kind of our goal, you know, 6 years ago, was just to establish the standard and you know, operate to the best of our ability.
I asked you about, like, this season, if there was a moment during your the 6 years here, when did you feel like you could see the program take a step, a big step, where it kind of pivoted from what it had been trying to find it, you know, you guys trying to find your way and find your find who you are to becoming what is now like kind of the standard of Roman?
I think if we look back at, I think it was 2022 season or 2021, we were 3-7 and LaSalle had just beat St. Joe's Prep, and LaSalle was the number one ranked team in the state. And we went into their place and beat them that year. And I think that was just for our kids. It was like, well, we can play with these caliber of programs. And I think that kind of established the footing for us to kind of push forward. And that's kind of when, I mean, I would say even before that, there was some telltale signs of, you know, like I said, the Archbishop Wood game was big for us. They went on to win the state title that year. But I think that LaSalle game is kind of what propelled us to, like, put our head down and work even harder.
How difficult is it? One of the things when you're trying to break through with a program, I always talk to coaches, is like, I feel like there's only so much you can do as a coach to teach kids how to win. You can give them the tools. You can talk about it. You can put them in the right position. But at the end of the day, they're the ones that have to make the plays. They're the ones that have to believe. Talk about how you help kids get over the finish line, learning how to win and learning how to win consistently.
I think kids just need to be believed in. We spend a great deal of time of with establishing relationships with our kids. I'm a firm believer that, you know, coaches can only lose games. They can't win games. It's on the player. All credit goes to the player. But you can get more out of the young man when you invest in them. So we have a great group of kids that put the work in. And I think getting to know them off the field, knowing what makes them tick, knowing what buttons you can push, I think that all matters. We have a saying in our program where we don't want to be transactional with them. It's not just about you, the football player. It's about you, the person. And I think once you're invested with them as people, I think they play harder for you.
So now let's talk a little bit about your journey growing up. Were you football all the time as a kid, or were you playing everything?
Yeah, so I was a football and baseball guy, but it was always sports. It was always going to be something. So, you know, I think our generation you played more than one sport growing up. This is a more specific generation now. But, yeah, I was football, baseball, and a little indoor track.
What position did you play in baseball?
So I was a center fielder and catcher.
And you were a wide receiver for the most part in football, right?
I was a wide receiver, and at our high school at Norristown High, it was – back then it was referred to as tailback high. So if you wanted to get on the field, there was only one tailback. So, you know, we moved positions, and I ended up as a receiver and a strong safety.
Was football always your favorite sport, or was it depending upon if it was baseball season, track season, that's what was number one on the depth chart when it was what you were doing?
Baseball was always my favorite sport.
Really?
Yeah, I just enjoyed the game. I don't know if it was the time of year that it was played. We played throughout the summer, you know, and in the spring for school. But I just I like the pace of baseball, where some people don't like the pace of baseball. I just like the intricacies of the game. But I would say if there was like a percentage, it was probably 60-40 in favor of baseball. I mean, I love football. You know, football was somewhere where you can be around your brothers, just like the kids now, right? Be around your brothers and try to attain a common goal. But baseball, I think I was a little bit better in, you know, so that's probably why it was my preference.
When you played football, looking back, do you feel like you looked at the game a little bit like a coach? Like, do you look back now at your approach now at your playing days and go like, I can see it? Or were you just playing and not thinking about it in any other lens?
Yeah, no, I was just playing. I never had any inclination of being a coach. I actually don't think I was, like, looking back at it, I don't think I was a very good teammate at the time when I was in high school playing. I got along with my teammates really well, and I cared about them. But looking at the things that when you have to be selfless and put your team first, I don't know that I always did that. you know, as a kid. So, you know, I don't think I was in my head anybody that could be a coach in the future. I think my life, you know, how my life kind of transpired, and you know, as years went on, that's kind of what led me to be able to be here.
Did you realize that in real time in high school, or is it something as you matured and you looked back at some of your, you know, some of the things you did, some of the ways you thought that you're like, eh, a little cringeworthy?
Yeah, no, that was something that I looked back on. You know, at the time, you know, whether it's something that's like an on-field thing where you're like, hey, get me to football, right? Well, that's selfish. You don't know that at the time, you know, but you just want the football, right? Or just, you know, the way maybe sometimes my mindset was to worry about me first as a player. And you learn that, like I said, as you get older, and especially as you start coaching and you come across young men who have similar traits, and you could tell them from experience, like, hey, listen, this is the way I used to carry myself too, and let's try to pivot and you know, carry ourselves like this.
So you played at Norristown, and then you went to East Stroudsburg, mm-hmm. and started playing college football, and then you took the military path. And reading up on you, it sounds like 9/11 really affected you, and that was kind of a pivot point mm-hmm. in life that led to you going the military track. Am I correct?
Yeah, I would say that's correct. You know, I went to East Stroudsburg and wasn't sure how much I loved the game anymore. You know, from a football perspective, I was there. It was business. They were paying for my education. No problem. But I wouldn't say that I was fully in love with the game of football at that point, just because I didn't put myself in positions that I thought I would put myself in, whether it be academically or on the field. So, you know, yeah, I'll never forget. 9/11 happens, and like all of us, right, we see that, and the world just kind of stood still for a little bit. And as time went on, it became a decision where if I'm in limbo of what I want to do right now, you know, with the game and with school, I have an opportunity to fight for my country and to do something selfless, right, which was the opposite of who I was prior to going to college. So I took that opportunity and listened to the military.
Given what you said about, you know, how you approached football in high school and such, and the opportunity to do stuff, was this, how much of this decision was to prove something to yourself?
It definitely was to prove something to myself. And I just remember, you know, at that time, it was weird because we didn't have a bunch of social media back then and everything. But just, I don't know how you felt or how anybody else felt, but like, I didn't feel safe, mm-hmm. you know, like, and that was the first time as an American, right? We don't typically really go through that. I just didn't feel safe. And I felt like, well, maybe there was a little bit of fight or flight, but one thing I'm not going to do is like stand there and not feel safe. So, and I always had a level of interest in joining the military, specifically being in the infantry and then have an opportunity to serve my country.
Where did that interest come from? Was it just from kind of what you saw? Was it family?
Yeah, I mean, I know my dad was a Marine, but it just was maybe those commercials over the years. They used to have some really good commercials, but it just was something that kind of always intrigued me. I never thought of myself as somebody that could just, you know, go to an office every day for work or anything like that. So once you start realizing that football may not work out or athletics may not work out, that's something that just was always in the back of my mind, like, you know, if there's no NFL, if there's no MLB, maybe this is an opportunity.
So you joined the Army. Mm-hmm. Was that in 2002?
2002.
What's that like when you get into that lifestyle? It's different. Like, I don't think it's anything you can really replicate. You know, what was initially, did it take right away? Was there an adjustment? Did you think, were there any point where you were like, I don't know if you want to say you made a mistake, but were you like, I don't know if this is for me, or right away were you all in?
So it's a great question, because physically it was oddly easy.
Football, that makes sense. Yeah,
you know, but mentally, I think that's where it helped me the most, because you're with and around so many people from so many different walks of life that you have to have compromise. And then the standard and the way of life that the military is trying to, you know, instill in you is it's a one side street, like you're going to conform. You know, so I think for any substantial character flaws that I had prior to join the military, I think that helped me a great deal. But that was the toughest the toughest part. You know, somebody telling you when to go to sleep, when to wake up, how to wear your uniform, how to do this, how to do that. Somebody telling you when you're wrong and you not being able to, you know, there was no defend yourself, right? So I think that the mental side of it was definitely the tougher part, but also the part that helped the most.
Did you ever almost get yourself in trouble just because of not specifically the when you're told something and not – because I owe a lot of kids, and I don't care where you come from, mm-hmm. 18, 19, 20, 21, somebody tells you something, you don't want to do it. Your reflex is, yeah, no, that's not happening. Like, did you have moments where you had to really fight through the want to say something or to fight back?
There was times where I'd say something to the drill sergeant, you know, and everybody would look at me like, what is he doing, you know? And then you realize real fast that you're going to lose that one, you know. And this was a different time, so they can, the drill sergeants, let's just say, can interact with you a little bit differently than they can now. So, I definitely push the envelope a little bit. But what they do in the military is they teach you elite level team building. So when they realized that I was willing to take whatever physical punishment or whatever discipline that they could dish out, what happens is they start making you, your teammates, your battle buddies, you know, those around you start paying for when you act out. And then when you see this guy over here doing, you know, 1,000 burpees or up downs because you were late to formation and you see how it affects other people, then you start to take inventory of like, all right, you know, this is on me. I never meant for anybody else to have to deal with this. So I think it starts making you be more of a leader and take accountability.
Where were you stationed?
I was Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri. I was Fort Benning, Georgia, Fort Stewart, Georgia. And that was that before the National Guard.
When did you feel like you truly became a soldier?
After graduation, when you report to your duty station, you kind of just fall in line. And I think as we ramp up for deployments or whatever the case, it's life or death, right? So it's serious. So, I've had some leadership in the past, like talk to me about even, you know, what I needed to do to be a better soldier. And I think some of that really hit home with me. And I don't know if there was one time, but just being in theater in country in Iraq, I think that was, an eye opener, and there's no time to not take it serious, you know.
How long were you in Iraq?
The deployment was, I think, in a 12-month deployment. So, and I think I was there 10 months total. I think I was a month behind my unit. So I think they did 12. I did 10 or 11.
What was your role?
I was just an infantryman. You know, I was just a lineman. And, you know, as time went on, you know, I made a sergeant on my way out, you know, my way out of country. And I got out as an E6. So, you know, my role was just, I was your everyday soldier, you know, and we had a great platoon with some great people, you know. So I just did my part. I was one of, I don't know, 40 guys.
Were you in Baghdad?
We were in Taji, Iraq, which was, I think, the northern part of Iraq. And we were at what they used to call a JSS, which was like a remote base, and it was called ROAD. So we were there. That's where we spent our time.
What was the experience like? Were you interacting a lot with Iraqis, or were you more just kind of self-contained on the base?
No, we were interacting with the locals, and because there was a time where we were starting to scale down there.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole mission was about infrastructure and rebuilding. And there was an agreement signed at some point where we couldn't do a mission without, you know, the Iraqi army. So we were trying to get them to lead everything and to kind of drive the mission forward just to make sure when we got out of here, when we scaled back and we got out of country, that they would keep, you know, policing their country the way they needed to. So we interacted with them, and we were also self-contained because, like I said, the JSS was just, you're separate from the main base. So we were literally in the middle of, you know, a town. It was more of a rural town, but we were off on our own there.
The war in Iraq, it kind of had a life as far as how Americans looked at it, became controversial. How did how did the Iraqis, were they welcoming to you when you were working with them? Did they work with you? Was there a standoffishness? Like, did it vary?
I think like anything, it was back and forth. You know, initially there's a hesitation. I think the unit that was there before us did a really good job of establishing just a pretty good relationship. So for us to come in, it was just them getting to know us getting to know them, and just how you treat each other from there. You know, you learn really fast that the Iraqis and that local community in particular, they're not the enemy. You know, there's a whole system in place with why things happen and how they happen, that is a lot of time out of the control of, you know, that local community. But what you want to do is establish a relationship with them. So when there is something suspicious going on, when there is something a little out of order, that they feel confident enough to come tell you about this, you know, so you can act on that and, you know, make it a safer place.
Was it scary?
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, our first week, we had a fatality and, you know, from there, it's just like, yeah, you know what you're up against and every day. But at the same time, you have to focus on getting the job done, and you have a family that you want to get home to. It's like every soldier does. Right. So, you know, that was kind of the driving factor to let you focus on the job and doing your best to make it home.
Did the experience in Iraq specifically change you think?
Yeah, for sure. You know, and I would just say more or less from a brotherhood standpoint and understanding what that means. You know, a lot of those guys that were in my platoon and in my unit were still in contact to this day. We lost some guys, you know, after the fact, but it definitely changes you because it's a unique situation where you know that everybody that's there is sacrificing something to be there. Everybody that's there is away from their family, away from their loved ones, away from their day to day. So it definitely changes you because not too many people, if you're not in the military, can say that you've done that.
We need to take a break on One-on-One. We will have more with Rick Preet in just a couple of moments. But right now, there's nothing quite like the Honda Accord Hybrid and the CR-V Hybrid when it comes to exhilarating efficiency. With hybrid technology and thrilling capability, these vehicles deliver an electrifying performance on every drive. Discover for yourself what truly makes these hybrids special. Redefine your driving experience with Honda, KBB.com's best value brand of 2023. Contact your local Honda dealer today about the Honda Accord Hybrid and the CR-V Hybrid. And now on One-on-One with Matt Leon, let's return to our conversation with Rick Preet, head football coach at Roman Catholic High School.
When you talk about how you were in high school, you know, give me the football, and you're not thinking other people. You know, you're only talking, what's this, 4, 5, 6 years later that you're having this experience? Like, that's a lot to process for a young man. Did you appreciate kind of the change that you went through in that relatively short amount of time? Or was it just, this is the journey and this is how it's happening? Because I think when you look back on it, it's got to be like, wow, that's really something.
Yeah, so I think I'm always a little late to the party with like appreciating things, you know, and I think in the more, I would say, recent years, in the last 4 or 5 years, 6 years, kind of look back, and that's when you can say, you know, I appreciate the growth and the development from my time, just overall, just my journey, the ups and downs. Just I appreciate all of it because your journey is what makes you who you are, you know. So just looking back at it, I don't know if when I was in the moment that I understood that. Obviously, there's little signs that you're getting better, right? And like I said, I've had some people, Lieutenant Smith, who had passed away, he was a big motivating force with me to be a better soldier, you know, so I could see I was doing better, especially, you know, he came up to me and told me, he was like, man, you are, you know, it's like you're doing really good, you know, and just that little reassurance helped me a lot. But just in totality, looking back at it, you get a more clear picture the more years you're separated from it.
When you come back from Iraq, was it difficult to readjust back to the U.S.?
Yeah, for sure. Just little things. You're on such high alert every day. And then, you know, to come home and your wife have to tell you, like, relax, like, you're home, you know. And, you know, it's just whether it's just being in traffic, like just being in traffic makes you uncomfortable, right? Because everywhere in traffic, you were scanning for a threat, right? But there's an adjustment period. I mean, and like I said, the camaraderie, you lose that a little bit, you know, the weather, right? There's all kinds of adjustments and changes, but definitely a huge adjustment.
So when does that enter into the idea of something you wanted to pursue? Like, what's the origin story there?
So my daughter, Ariana, she signed up for cheerleading, and I used to take her all the time. And I would just set up my chair and just sit there. And one of the youth football coaches knew me, and he had asked me to help him coach. And I was like, and he actually knew me from baseball. He didn't know me from football, really. And I was like, nah, you know, I'm okay. And then another buddy of mine who coached up there was like, listen, you're going to be here every day anyway with your daughter cheering. You might as well help out. And I just was like, at the time, done with the game. You know, I was like, I was over it. You know, obviously I'm sitting here today because I decided to get up and help. And, you know, next thing I know, I was all in. It started with one practice. And then the biggest factor was just being able to see how you can impact a young man's life and change his outlook on things. And it's the same to this day. Like, it has nothing to do with football. You know, a lot of it is just like, you're helping kids get on the right path and stay on the right path. So that's kind of, you know, it started with just taking my daughter to cheer practice and somebody talking me into helping out with youth kids. And then from there, it was like I had a love for it. And I also had people tell me like, hey, you're pretty decent at it. You should probably try to keep pursuing it, which I did.
And this was in Conshohocken where it mm-hmm. started?
Yeah, Conshohocken for sure.
So you fall in love with it. Do you remember the first moment where you realized that this was something that had to be a part of your life, whether it was an interaction or you're working with a kid and the light bulb went off and you saw that moment of understanding? Like, do you remember?
Yeah, I mean, so our team that year, that Little League team, they were 14 years old, I think, 13 or 14. And I think we were like a middling team. We were like a 500 team. And I convinced the coach to let me take over the defense. And we changed some things around and all the kids really liked it, you know, and it worked out. And then we actually wound up winning our division championship. And it was the first instance of watching the kids go from, you know, thinking that they didn't have a shot to like, oh, we can do this, you know. And then for myself, like making an adjustment to these kids and not just on the field, but like helping change their mindset and how they approach it. That was special for me. It was more special than winning that championship that we won. It was like, these kids are believing in themselves. So that first year that I ever coached, that moment in particular is what I'll remember.
Do you remember like right there where you kind of like, this is, I'm doing this going forward. I don't know what it's going to look like, but this is what I need to do. Or was it kind of a slow burn build after that, that as you had more experiences, it just became, this is the direction I got to go?
Yeah, no, it definitely was like, okay, I'm intrigued by this. The next step was, what does it look like if I can have my own team, you know? And I coached my own youth team for a couple years. We did some good things there. And from there, just kind of matriculated into, all right, what's next? It's always been like, what's next? You know, that's always been the mindset. So that led to high school, and extremely happy that we started the journey.
How much does the military background help you in coaching? Just, you talked about team building, obviously, but I would imagine time management, organization, attention to detail, those things really translate really well to coaching at any level.
Yeah. Everything you just mentioned plays a factor in it. And I would say, you know, obviously we do our best to be organized and everything as coaches, but, you know, I never thought of myself as the smartest guy in the room. You know, that's just not me. I always try to hang my head on being the hardest worker in a room. And I think the military experience, definitely the adversity that you face with that is just, it's different. It's different than the normal person would deal with. And, pushing kids to understand that if you work hard, goals are obtainable, you know, and I think that's the biggest takeaway for me.
So spent time at Malvern Prep, Imhotep, then Roman. Like, what's the door that opens that gets you to Roman Catholic?
Yeah, so it's funny. When I was at Malvern, we played Roman Catholic, and I remember looking on the field, and I was like, and I told Aaron Brady, who was the head coach at the time, you know, when he hired me, he said, "What's your goal?" I said, I want to be a head coach, high school head coach." And I remember us playing Roman Catholic and looking on the field, and the purple and gold, you know, they had the Notre Dame gold helmet at the time. That intrigued me. Just that program itself just intrigued me because it kind of checked the boxes that I was looking for. There was diversity on the field. You know, you had kids from every ethnic background there. You could see the talent. You could see that they were close. And a lot of people don't know this, but when we played them, I left that field saying, "That's the job that I want one day." You know, so when the Malvern run was over, I ended up at Imhotep Charter, got hired by Nick Lincoln. Very grateful for that. We had two state final appearances during our time there. And then an associate kind of reached out and let me know that there was an opportunity at Roman Catholic. And was I interested in it? And it was like one of those things where I was fully entrenched in the Imhotep program. And I loved what we were doing there. And I don't know if any other job would have come open if I would have took it. But when it was Roman Catholic, for me, it was a no-brainer.
When you take over, did you know what you didn't know as far as being the guy, like running your own program? And I don't even mean getting used to the school and new procedures and new phases and stuff like that, but just everything that's going to come across your desk that maybe you hadn't been acclimated to before just because it wasn't your mm-hmm. role. So, you know, how there's the football, which you obviously have a handle on, but there's everything else that goes with being a head coach. How long did it take you to get comfortable with all that?
To be honest, I'm still getting comfortable with all of it because you have a vision of what the program is going to be, of what you want, and you say, this is what we're going to do to get there. And then what I'm learning, what my role is as we're trying to do things to get there, there's going to be road bumps and there's going to be distractions and things that stop you from being able to get there. And your job is to navigate that. And, you know, we're trying to navigate it every day. But, you know, the easiest thing is to build excitement into the program and to set standards. The hardest thing is to get everybody to understand what those standards are, to buy into those standards. And like I said, just to navigate it, whether it's something that budget-wise, you know, you're dealing with, or logistically, right? Like, we're not too far from here. We're downtown, right? So just getting to practice every day, and you want to practice from this time to this time, but you can't because there's a Made in America concert. You know, just navigating all those things is something that we're still working on. And then you learn that just, you know, the football kind of comes as when you become the head football coach, you're doing less football and it's more everything else.
As a coach, do you prefer practice or games?
Practice for sure. The games take care of themselves. Again, I, you know, this is a military driven mindset when I say that the process is the most important thing to me, because if your process is good and you know, you are chipping away every day, you're going to be in a position. It doesn't mean you're going to win it all. It doesn't mean you're going to be the best, but our goal is to be in the conversation all the time. So if you're in the conversation all the time, it's because you're putting the work in. So that's kind of the mindset, is like, the games are fun. The games are for the kids to go out and show what they've been working on. But the process, practice, 3 hours on the field, all the conditioning, the weight room, the mandatory meetings, that's the fun part.
Given everything we've talked about, what do you consider success? I would imagine it goes beyond wins, losses, and points. Like, how do you measure success?
The relationship with your kids, them believing in you, you believing in them, and helping them achieve their goals. I think that's the number one thing. And we have, you know, we had several kids signed to colleges today. So that's one area where, you know, we're going to keep working, because, you know, we have kids that are already signed, but we have a lot of kids that still need to find a home college-wise. So helping kids get to the college level, or even just them coming back to the program, you know, 2-3 years later and checking in, that means that you have a really good relationship with them. But I think the way you affect people off the field is how you judge your success. You know, it's just the relationships and making sure these young men are in good position.
Do you have a game day routine?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it's kind of has gotten sidetracked because of the weather, but I typically like to play a round of golf before a game on Friday. But that's my routine, is to get up in the morning and go hit some golf balls and decompress and maybe go for a long walk and just get everything, you know, just when you get to the school and you're around the kids, let them see even keel, no tension, nothing uptight. And golf goes a long way for me with that.
You talk about the relationships and all. What's your favorite part of the job? Is it just the impact on the kids?
That's it. Yeah. Just seeing them, whether they want to go out into the workforce, you know, being able to make a call or write a letter for them, or them guys signing to go play college football, you know, whatever they want to do in life, helping them get to that point is my personal favorite part of the job.
Final question. I travel back in time, talk to a young Rick Preet, let's say in 1999, 2000, and I lay out what the journey's going to be. Would you have believed it?
I would not have believed it. And I would also say that, you know, the biggest thing I would say is that you have to keep growing and keep getting better every day. And you can't rest on any laurels, and you have to, you know, it's got to be continued progression and progress. Mistakes are going to happen and life is going to happen, but you have to try to push through. That's the biggest thing I would, looking back at it, just all the obstacles and everything, that's still trying to overcome that, right? So I think us, for as long as we live, are going to continue to face battles and ups and downs. And I would just say keep pushing.
Rick Preet, thanks so much for coming in. This was great.
Thank you, man.
And that will do it for this week's episode of One-on-One with Matt Leon, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. Want to thank Rick Preet, head football coach at Roman Catholic High School, for coming in studio and being our guest this week. If you like the show, if you listen on Apple Podcasts, go ahead and leave us a rating and a review. You can follow the show on X at One-on-One Pod. You can follow me there as well at MattLeon1060. Thanks so much for listening all year long. And be sure to check us out again in 2025 when we bring you more conversations with people you should know more about.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.